swim at Circa Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company.
All right, here we go. CNC on the road. You heard it. Stadium Swim. Mateo's out here with the setup. Back in our Findlay Toyota studios. It is Griffin. Good stuff on the way. We'll get you ready for both the Running Rebel basketball season, which is starting in a couple of Mondays. And, of course, lots of UNLV football talk today. More on the Raiders, more around the National Football League. We got a Thursday night football game going down tonight. Two teams that, frankly, have surprised me. I thought the Rams would be better, but I think a lot of the problems are injuries. But there's news on the horizon for them. They're getting some of their receivers back. Now, will they be 100% tonight? Probably not, but at least they're trending in the right direction. And then, of course, the very surprising, I still think overrated, Minnesota Vikings are the road team in this one, and they are the favorite, and the line has dipped now to 2.5. Total is 47.5, and we'll have Brad Powers in, Brad Powers 7, up on Twitter. He'll be in a little later to give his leans and likes, and especially in the world of college football. Griffin, buddy, you got the throat clear? You ready to go?
Oh, yeah, ready to go.
The energy.
Clear and ready.
Mr. Sigh. Only person who sighs more is me. That's okay, though. That's okay. It's a rough lead up to the show each and every day for Cofield and Company in the Lotus Broadcasting Studios. Are you surprised by the Vikings?
Of course. Who isn't surprised by the Vikings?
I mean, there might be some people out there every once in a while. I'm trying to think of something I was going to scream about today where I'd go, I told you! And I was the only one who told you. You know what case I didn't scream out yet?
What was that?
Michigan and Michigan State are playing this weekend. Michigan is 4-3 and 2-2. I am the only person in the country going back to the middle of February who said you absolutely have to bet against Michigan football making the college football playoff. And I'm sure there are people right now who are like, oh, it's obvious. Well, then why didn't you bet it? First of all, the odds, you couldn't find them for a couple of months. When they came out, Michigan was a slight favorite, like minus 120 to make the playoff. They have no shot now. So an example of what someone could do with the Vikings. I'm sure there's someone out there who said, Sam Darnold has found his home. He's going to be freaking awesome. I'd like someone to tweet that to me with a legitimate link or some audio, but you're right. They're on the pleasant surprise side. Today we're going to do a lot of happy radio.
Love it.
Do you love it? Are you sure?
Oh, yeah. Definitely in the mood for some happy radio for sure.
Well, I want to get to the lunacy that I saw last night. Oh, by the way, actually, in the next 5 minutes, I do have something else I want to scream about. And actually, I'm going to go back to 1984 on this one when I was the only one saying it. How about that? Last night is a good representation of what sports owners should be like. They're all filthy rich. Most are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, so they've made the money. There's really nothing to worry about. Everyone should be like Steve Ballmer. That guy just has fun in life. Why does owning a basketball team in the NBA or owning a football team or being a major league owner, why does that have to be a sad, like, angst-filled existence? With Ballmer, he's just friggin' thrilled.
I mean,
all the time. He built this new arena. How geeked up was he last night?
He was very excited, as he should be, watching that game. The stadium looks popping. That wall of fans definitely is something that's very unique to the Clippers now, and it seems like it's been working. KD looked like he was struggling at the free throw line. So, I mean, obviously, Ballmer, why wouldn't you be happy? Your team looks good. Your stadium is clean. It's a good day in Clipper world.
I don't know what to concentrate on first. I don't know. I couldn't really tell what the wall of fans was. I saw the highlights of Kevin Durant missing the free throws. Why is that a special configuration aside from it's all Clippers fans behind the basket?
I saw reports earlier this year when they were talking about the stadium and it getting built and Ballmer's plans. He said that that wall is specifically made, or that part of the stadium is made, so that it feels like the fans are on top of you. Mm. They're just right there. They're screaming when you're at the free throw line.
Okay.
I believe I saw some statistic that's showing that throughout the preseason and the first game, it seems to be working.
Yeah, I know. I think the Suns at the beginning of shooting into that were like 4 of 8 on free throws, and Kevin Durant's like a 99.9% free throw shooter, so for him to miss is crazy. I was going to have the Vast Sound Crew at Lotus Broadcasting pull Steve Ballmer with the opening introduction, but it was, I don't even know if we could get it where it would be like properly modulated, it would just blow out speakers. He got on the microphone and just was screaming. First of all, he's doing like this weird rhythmic clapping, and I'm like, I don't know. No one else is kind of really doing it. He's into it, and he's just like, welcome, Clipper Nation! He is so happy, and I don't know about the concessions sitch yet, if they're a big rip, or maybe he's actually going to offer affordable concessions. Can I tell you one of the biggest things with arenas – going back years and years and years and years.
Please do.
Can I please go to an arena and that's full, right? That has 13,000 plus people in it. And pardon my French. By the way, yesterday, did someone use pardon my French on the show, but they actually used a French word? I'm like, I don't think that's the way you use it. Didn't someone say accoutrement? And they're like, pardon my French. I'm like, I think you have to be kind of crass when you're going to pardon your French.
Yeah, right.
I want to go to an arena. I already know I'm going to pay through the nose for the beer and the food. The seats are going to be expensive. Can I simply take a piss inside of like 4 minutes?
Oh, that is the dream. I was thinking about this actually yesterday when Willie was talking about game day Raider employees jumping the line. I was thinking to myself, you know, I am also a game day operations employee over there with the Raiders. So I sat there and listened to him do his take. But
I thought that was... I didn't like that. I thought that was insensitive. I don't. The game day people, if they want to jump on the line of the buffet, they're working. I'm sure they're not breaking the bank. I will make a comment about Allegiant. Upstairs is like third world, and I don't mean the crowd. I mean the lines for the bathroom. That's outrageous in a new stadium. I have no idea if they can fix it. I don't think so.
Go ahead.
Is it bad downstairs too? Because
it's throughout the entire stadium. If you especially,
are you
not
sure?
Not even just half. Oh yeah, Steve.
I'm there for UNLV games, so the crowd's a little smaller.
Oh yeah, I'm roaming there throughout those game days, and I could tell you every single bathroom is got a line. The men's are the worst, believe
it or
not.
Yeah.
The men's room is the worst. I don't know what the issue is, but yeah, like you said, it's a new stadium, and they already have issue.
Listen, I'm not Pollyannish. I'm not a wallflower. I was just in New Orleans, and they still have the old pee troughs. You know, you can just stand side by side.
Oh, that's nasty.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think for the prices you pay, you should be able to go to the bathroom pretty quickly. And Steve Ballmer, listen to the fans. He's got 1,116, I think, stalls and urinals.
Yep.
1,116. That is one for every 15 people in the building. Like, he didn't just do it. He's like, we're going to make it the greatest bathroom facility on the face of the earth. Clipper Nation! All right, we come back. More fun on the way. We're going to talk to Curtis Terry about the Runner Rebels. We'll get in. Can we get someone? Well, yesterday Willie was kind of okay on it, but more feedback on Bronny and LeBron playing together. Can we get some good feedback? Well, I don't know if CT's a big fan of LeBron, so look out.
Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company.
Circa, this is the spot, the Fight House. Goes down on fight nights, boxing, and especially MMA, UFC. Circa Fight House and Stadium Swim this weekend featuring UFC 308. 20th visit already to Abu Dhabi for the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Topuria and Holloway for the 145 title. Ankalaev, one of Griffin's favorite guys at 205, is fighting on the card. And then former 185 king Bobby Whitaker against Chimaev. So really good card, really deep card. And lots of grappling and aggression and power. It's going to be nasty. UFC 308. So come on out here to Stadium Swim. And it's actually in the afternoon. If I said night, it's actually an afternoon card. So get your information to CircleLasVegas.com and be out here. You can sit in the pool and watch all the great fights. Curtis Terry is in. He's back in town, I know, very shortly. What's up, CT?
Not much. What's going on, fellas? How are you?
Good, man. I was just raving about the human being, the greatest owner in all of sports. The results aren't great, but he's enthusiastic. Stevie Ballmer last night just losing his mind over his new arena. Now, his team didn't exactly back him up, but what do you think of the first NBA game at the Intuit Dome as the Clips fall a little bit short of the Suns?
I mean, you mentioned Ballmer. We got to start there. I mean, the energy that Steve Ballmer has, you can't do anything but appreciate it. I mean, obviously, he loves sports. He loves basketball, being a guy that wishes he could get the Sonics back up here in Seattle. But the energy that he brings, I mean, if you work for him, if you play for the Clippers, you've got to be able to be infectious about his energy and what he brings. He wants to win. He doesn't stop at any cost to make sure his team's going to be successful. And for them to come out there and have a great showing for that game, just not to be able to get the win, I think the Clippers are going to hopefully turn the corner, but it definitely doesn't help that Kawhi Leonard is out, unfortunately.
Yeah, what do you think the deal is with Kawhi? And I guess we can – I mean, I feel like it's the same, but it's different. Now there's a lawsuit. I don't know if this is one of the Shelton family members. There's a Kevin Shelton who was at San Diego State, who was a personal trainer to Kawhi Leonard. He's filed a lawsuit against the Clippers. I don't know what's happening here, but this Kawhi thing just seems to be real fishy, and it's been going on for a while.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate. I mean, obviously, when Kawhi Leonard is playing, he's been healthy. He's one of the top 10 players in the NBA. He's proven that in terms of what he did with the Spurs, what he did winning the finals MVP with the Toronto Raptors for that year he was there. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And I think for him to be able to get back on the court, it's going to help them and it's going to help their team and take some of that pressure off James Harden. But the situation now, and I just saw it come across the particular notification that there's now a lawsuit that's been filed. It does seem fishy. Something seems up. But I think it's a matter of getting him healthy, getting him on the court. And I don't think that there's anything wrong that the Clippers are doing, but trying to make sure that he's healthy, kind of similar to what the Sixers are doing for Joel Embiid. But when it all plays out publicly and now with the new player management and player rest rules that the NBA has enacted, it makes it a little bit tougher, but there's obviously more eyes on it as well.
Curtis Terry's with us here on this Thursday at Circa Las Vegas, Cofield & Company. All right, most of the feedback on Bronny getting to play with his dad in an NBA game has been kind of snarky, downright negative. There's a lot of dislike of LeBron. I know he's not one of your favorites, but I want your opinion on what that was with Bronny and LeBron, and then how Shaq reacted.
You know, I think it's good for them. It's good for the James family, for them to be able to have that moment, for LeBron to be able to play in the NBA, play with his son, for them to be the first father-son duo to do that, to achieve that, to accomplish it. I think that's great. I'm along with everybody else, though. I think it's a situation where if you look at it, he clearly didn't look like he belonged on the court. He got limited minutes, and I think Shaq put it best in terms of congratulations. You guys achieved that. You accomplished it. Now we've got to put that behind us. And I think it's probably going to be a situation where Bronny's going to spend the majority of the season, or a lot of time at least, with the South Bay Lakers, where he can be able to develop, get a lot of reps, get a lot of playing time. That's what he needs. But it's a situation where it's unfortunate for him because he took a lot of heat, and it really wasn't his fault. I think anybody that they were LeBron's son in that position, they would want to get drafted as well. They wouldn't mind playing there. A lot of good things are going to come from it, but with the good things come the bad, and that's just the negative attention, the negative pub. And basically just the haters who say he shouldn't be there, and that's debatable, but nonetheless, he is there. So I think, like Shaq said, now you got to get to work, put your head down, grind, improve yourself, not to anybody else, more so to yourself, that you would deserve to be there and that you belong.
One of the stories I'm really interested in following is maybe the next step, if there is a big step forward. They took a big step forward last year, and that's the Rockets. What do you think of the Rockets? What are they doing with their contract work here? What is this team going to look like in a couple of years? Who do they want to build around?
You know, it's interesting. I think what they did when they brought in Ime Udoka, and obviously they've had success here last year. They got to 41-41, drastic improvement in terms of what they did the year before. But the thing that kind of came out, and Brian Windhorst kind of mentioned it in terms of them signing Jalen Green to that rookie extension. It's the largest rookie extension in the history of the NBA. 3 years, $110 million or something like that. Nine-figure deal for a rookie extension. That's huge. Obviously, the numbers these days are off the charts. But it's interesting to how they kind of paired it to where it could be a tradable contract. The first 2 years are guaranteed. Third year is that player option. And for him being the youngest guy drafted ever out of the G League at number two to come in, and obviously he's a high-caliber athlete. Scoring prowess is second to none in terms of what he's doing in his production. But I think it's now for the Rockets to try to be able to build a solid competitive team to get to the playoffs. Now, does he kind of fit that? He got you there. Does he fit building that thing into a perennial playoff team year in and year out? Maybe, maybe not. But I think the way they structured that deal, and I think what a lot of teams are going to start doing, is start young, build it up, and then structure yourself to where you can have guys that are possibly tradable, where they've got a lot of value, not just on the court, but also in that contract as well for other teams looking to make a splash, but also looking to maybe move off some cap bodies.
So you think that Jalen Green could actually be used and flipped to get veteran talent if they want to make a big jump forward? I mean, his shooting percentages last year were not great. That doesn't mean he's not going to get better. He's 22 years old, but he was 43 from field goal, you know, normal field goal range or overall field goals, and 33 from deep. It was interesting in the offseason. They seem to be like the fourth or fifth choice for a lot of big-name free agents, so I'm curious about their direction. So you might be onto something here about signing a young guy, getting him at a manageable contract, but then flipping him to a team that wants to give up and build.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the route that you might see guys going. Now, not saying that he's going to get traded, but it does draw some intrigue for him. But like you said, he's a volume kind of shooter. The volume player has to have the ball a lot. You got to put up a lot of shots to get his numbers. That's not very attractive, and especially now in the analytics stage of the NBA. But it's something where they may be able to have something. Like you mentioned, guys are looking at that in terms of a free agent destination. Obviously, the city of Houston and the success that they've had there is something that draws guys, but also no state income tax in Texas. That's another thing that's going to draw people there. There's a big reason why Dirk Nowitzki didn't leave the Mavericks, and a lot of guys want to go there. So there's a lot of different things that play in, and I think what the Rockets are doing, having a young group, they've got all the control and all the power and a lot of flexibility with a bright future ahead.
Is the NBA ready to finally put its foot down in some form or fashion on load management with Joel Embiid? What's the NBA working on here?
It kind of seems like it. So kind of just the same kind of vibe in terms of what the Clippers have been doing with Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, Kawhi's a lot of injuries, a lot of health issues over the last few years, well-documented. Same with Joel Embiid. I think the one issue that you kind of take to it and that I took to it is that when you've got guys coming out and declaring, hey, I'm not playing back-to-backs all year. And it's like, well, okay, is it premeditated? Are you really not healthy? Joel Embiid just played in the Olympics. So what was the setback between then and now? That's where he's not healthy and not able to participate and play these first three games. It makes you wonder kind of what the overall goal is and if does it have good intentions. And obviously, from a business standpoint, they want to protect their investment. They want to make sure that he's healthy when they get to the playoffs. But you still got to get to the playoffs first. I mean, they had a rough game, obviously, last night against the Bucks. But it's a situation where you've got to make sure that you're putting your guys in the best position. But with the new rules that we're bargaining into the CBA, it's going to be a slippery slope to what you're going to be able to do and not do in terms of resting guys. And if it's actual rest and load management, or if guys are actually hurt and they need that time off to be able to recover, to be able to get back on the court.
All right, let's get ready for college basketball as the openers are just a couple weeks away. Rebels open up at the Thomas and Mack against Alabama State on November 4th. They're going to play an exhibition, check that, a scrimmage, another one of these secret scrimmages on Friday night. They played one last Friday. They played against San Diego. I want to go through the, not really the box, but the numbers that the Run Rebels Twitter account put out. DJ Thomas had 23. Is that indicative of anything in his sophomore season? I believe he has to be more offensively minded. I think he can be, and I thought we got a glimpse of that at the end of last season.
Yeah, man, I think the super secret behind closed door scrimmages where they release highlights and they release the stats, not so secretive anymore. But I like the attempt at it. But I think DJ Thomas is going to have obviously a heavier load to carry in terms of what he's going to have to do to produce on the court for the Rebels. When you lose the Boone twins, obviously Keelan was a big score for the Rebels last year. Caleb Boone, in terms of what he did inside, getting second chance opportunities, put back lobs. The offense is going to look different. But I think for the Rebels' sake and the best thing that they've got going for them is you bring back Deedon Thomas Jr. You have a strong point guard, someone that can control the floor, control the game. On the Mountain West all preseason team going into the season. But he's going to be expected to be able to have to contribute and not just get his guys involved. He got his feet wet last year. He's got to get his guys involved. He's got to run the team, pick and choose his spots, push the tempo, pull back, know when it's time to get his, know when it's time to feed that hot hand. But I think he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, which is evident, which is clearly obvious. But I think this team is going to go as far as Deedon Thomas takes them, as well as how far he can get his teammates and what level he can raise them up to be able to compete in the Mountain West Conference this year.
They got a guy in a transfer in Jaden Henley from DePaul and prior to that Minnesota, who was a pretty high three-star, borderline four-star recruit. Lots of folks wanted him out of Southern California. He put up a stat line. And again, I don't put too much into this, but you know we want to build kind of off of what we see so far. But Jaden Henley had 21 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists. He seems to be one of those do-it-all guys at 6'7", can defend maybe the 1 through the 4. What do you know about him, and what do you expect from him?
I don't know much. I think just about what everybody else does in terms of what he did in terms of coming in from DePaul. But I think he fits the mold of what Kevin Kruger wants in terms of his players to be on the wing, guys that can shoot it, guys that can handle it, guys that can pass, that can make plays. And like you mentioned, guys that can guard multiple positions, 1 through 4 on the perimeter. When you can do multiple things on the floor, and I've said this for years, the more you can do on the floor, the more you bring to the game, the more opportunity you're going to have to play, the more impact you can have. I think he fits that role. And again, I think any given night, you're going to see a guy to be able to step up and knock down shots and put up 20-8 or 20-10, get a double-double because they're crashing the glass, because this team's going to have to crash the glass because they're not as ferocious, not as big as they have been in the past. But I think it's going to be a total team effort with these guys. But I think so far what you see with that stat line is going to bode well. But you've got to also mention Big Bear, in terms of Big Bear sharing what he's doing. And Coach has been raving about him every time I've talked to Coach, as have other people, in terms of the progress that he's made going from JUCO to Division One, and having that big guy in the paint, more of a bruiser, as opposed to the Rebels have had these hybrid kind of centers the last few years.
Yeah, I talked to Bear the other day. He's lost some weight. He said when he got to UNLV, he was 6'11", 302. Now he's 6'11". He didn't shrink. He's 6'11", 273. So he actually looked at me, and he's like, I got off of your diet. He didn't say that, but he's cleaned it up. He's cleaned it up, so he's thinner. But he actually made some really good points. He's like, in JUCO, I just wasn't driven to be in great shape. He said, up at this level and the way we play defense, I have to run up and down the floor, which I think is kind of saying, like, I ain't going to play if I can't move up and down the floor, which is true. If you can't move and you're not in shape in Kruger's system, you're gonna lose minutes.
Yeah, I think he figured it out quickly. And like you said, I mean, just with the amenities and the luxuries that you have at the Division I level compared to the junior college level, it's a little bit easier to be motivated here. And what they have with training table and to be able to give these guys unlimited meals with nutritionists and everything that they got with the program, these guys are going to be fed well. Now it's just their job and LV's job to make sure these guys are physically at their best and at their peak. And it looks like he's taking that serious. And if he's getting off of our diet, then he's going to be doing some positive things. But I think Big Bear Cherry is going to be a guy that's going to help these guys moving forward. But he knows that he's got to be able to be mobile, to be able to get out, hedge, show on a pick and roll, slide his feet. He wants to be able to play and not just be a big body. It looks like he's committed to doing that.
Curtis, I think I'll see you again tomorrow. You're getting on a flight to come back to Vegas. You're going to the game, right?
I am not, unfortunately.
Come
I had a trip planned. I know. I was at the game last week. I was in Corvallis. Was able to cheer on the boys last week and get that win against Oregon State. I'm actually going to Utah, going to see my brother to see the Jazz play the Warriors so I get to see Steph in person. But then I'll be back. I'll make sure I'll be at the last two home games for the Rebels, though, and definitely we'll be at that game November 30th when we take on that school up north. But I'm definitely cheering for Coach Odom and the boys for sure.
All right, Curtis, we'll see you.
Have a good one, guys.
There he is, former running Rebel, part of the broadcast crew, one of the hosts of the Kevin Kruger radio show. It's Curtis Terry. Friday nights, great way to kick off the football weekend. You might not be able to go to the UNLV game on this one, but you can watch it there. David Perico and the Raiders house band plays at Ellis Island in the front yard. Start off at 10 p.m. They go to midnight. You got a special menu at the front yard, and that group is so big, headed up by David Perico, that they've got a different look every single week when they pop up at 10 o'clock on Friday nights, Ellis Island in the front yard.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
Coming up in less than 10 minutes, our buddy Xavier Pope. A little more talk about the start of the NBA season. I thought there were some great stories last night. Great stories. Some of my heroes are back. Steve Ballmer's back. He didn't go anywhere, but, you know, you miss him during the offseason. He went crazy last night, opening up his new Intuit Dome. And, of course, I am the fourth Ball brother. But we said nothing against my dad, but I always wish that LeVar Ball was my dad. Lonzo's back. I think that's thrilling. I freaking love that so much. That poor guy's been through hell and back with his knee. So we'll get into that with EP in just a couple of minutes. Some other stories that developed last night, and this one is very much on the down low. It wasn't publicized enough, but because I cover a lot more college basketball, and especially in person, around the run of Rebels, and follow college basketball, and I especially watch the Big Ten because of where I went to school, the last couple of years, and I actually do think it affected tournament runs and runs in the Big Ten, the officiating was so quirky around this dude, Zach Edey. Zach Edey is a guy who came on big time the last 3 years. He was a mid-level prospect. Some of the doubts were simply because he's gargantuan. He's 7'4". Could he get up and down the floor? Well, you know, he turned into a guy who weighs 320 pounds, and he turned into a really good offensive player, a force. But I'll tell you, one of the best things he had in his game was drawing fouls but not fouling. And I always thought with him and also with Jadon Ladie, who was at San Diego State, I thought it was amazing how they could get through a game, potentially draw 12 to 18 fouls. And that like really happened in Edie and Lee games. They could draw 12 to 18 fouls, play rough as hell, but never foul out. Zach Edie, in his last 2 years, averaged somewhere between 1.9 and 2.2 fouls per game. This is a 7'4", 320-pound center. And I always thought that it was a little bit peculiar with the officiating. Like, they were a little protective of him, good and bad, not fouling him out of games. Last night, he made his debut for the Grizz. He played 15 minutes and fouled out with 6 fouls. Now, that could be the NBA is hyperspeed as compared to college basketball. But I think we're going to find out here that he's going to have to get a lot better at his contact management, or he's going to be fouling a lot, which I think goes back to his college days. It may have done him a disservice. It got him a lot more minutes, but he may not have learned that, bro, you're a very physical player. You're not allowed to pound everyone. And that doesn't mean the NBA is softer. It means that I think he's been crushing people for years, but Big Ten referees didn't call him on it. But, yeah, last night, 15 minutes of play. It's only one game, 6 fouls. He fouled out in 15 minutes. He had 5 rebounds. I think he had a couple of buckets. So, first-round pick, I don't know if that was too high for him. I thought he'd be more in that 25 to 40 range, and a guy who's expected to play maybe 15 or 20 minutes. We'll see what the Grizz get here in Zach Edie, because the first showing was a little bit dicey. 364-1100, 364-1100. Let's give away a pair of tickets to two winners here of a pair of tickets to Cypress Hill. Right around the corner from where we are at Circa. The show is this Saturday, downtown Las Vegas Event Center. Cypress Hill is here. DLVEC.com is where you can get your tickets. We'll give away 2 pairs of tickets here. I think I said it correctly. Callers 7 and 8, 7 and 8, 7 and 8, 7 and 8, 364-1100.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what, so what, so what's the scenario?
Lawyer and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
All right, let's do it. Let's bring in EP Xavier Pope in Chicago. Talk some NBA, talk some NFL, a little World Series. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Steve?
I will not be discussing my admiration for giant wieners of other guys, so we'll you know what I'm talking about there. Let's talk about the NBA, and I think there were some great stories the last couple of days. One, Steve Ballmer's a freaking lunatic with his new arena and his Clippers, and he doesn't win, but at least he cares about the fans. He's enthusiastic. I am so fired up for the return of Lonzo Ball after like 1,013 days away. I know people love to be negative and root against current day athletes, but you're having knee issues this young in your career. I mean, that's an incredible bummer to not be able to play.
Yeah, and when Lonzo Ball was on the court, he was very effective. One of the better defensive of a backcourt players in the league. I mean, he was contributing to that Bulls team being really effective in what they did. And props to the Bulls sticking by him to be organizationally to be able to do that. But his brother LaMelo Ball, though, coming out, balling out last night. Charlotte, who looks like they might be a problem in the East this year with him ascending to another layer of stardom in the league. So the Ball's looking pretty good this year to start the league. They season out.
And I think that's one of the stories in the East. You got some teams that are built around some older guys, and they're like super old, but by NBA standards, they're a little bit older, not LeBron standards. But I think the East is going to be crazy wide open. You're going to see some upper mobility, and I'm excited to see what the Pacers look like. In the West, I'm excited to see what the Grizzlies look like. I know many people are not on my side. I consider the man a hero to the NRA. I joke about that. But I hope Ja Morant can come back, stay healthy, not get in the crosshairs, pun intended, of the ridiculous NBA rules. I'm rooting for him to reach his potential, stay consistent, and get the Grizz back to a 50-win level.
I think they can do that. I think that Ja Morant, his talent is undeniable. His grit, you saw that on display, getting on the court, performing at a high level right away and going really hard at the bucket. He's a leader. He's shown that on the collegiate level. He's shown that on the professional level. Getting away from the game may have been the best thing for him to be able to settle himself down to be able to continue his career successfully.
Xavier Pope. Follow him up on Twitter, at Xavier Pope. Excellent Twitter account. He's an attorney. He went to the one of the finest law schools in the country, Rutgers. Let's talk about maybe not so nice times. Again, though, I'd like to see the guy succeed and stay consistent, but you were taking a couple of shots at Ben Simmons, my guy Ben Simmons.
I mean, he's not an all-star, and he was once an all-star. People were saying he's back. I mean, he had a wild grade. He had 8 assists in the game. He was a triple single. Until we see Ben Simmons play consistently at a high level, I'm not saying the guy's he's washed. I mean, his level of confidence doesn't show up on the court, doesn't show up on the stat sheet. And if that's your guy, Steve, good luck, man.
I know, right? That's my guy. Well, I mean, a lot of it he did to himself, and I think he's also got some mental things that he struggles with. I think mental is going to be a big part of what goes on with the Lakers. I can't guarantee that J.J. Redick is going to have the Lakers better offensively than the previous regime. I think that was the idea here. I want to play this bite because this is part of a long comment after the game by J.J. Redick, who, by the way, bro, come on, your hair's a nightmare. You can't let guys throw water all over your hair. But this was J.J. in the postgame.
I'm going to send in a request for the league tomorrow that we can play with worn-in basketballs. I'm not sure why we're playing in real games. I'm being dead serious. I'm not sure why we're playing in real games with brand-new basketballs. Anybody who's ever touched an NBA ball brand-new, it's a different feel and touch than a worn-in basketball. I didn't realize it till a timeout. There was a long rebound. I grabbed it. I was like, what? Why are we playing with this ball?
Xavier?
First and foremost, I think that J.J. Redick is going to be a great coach. I like him leaning into the fact that most guys prefer a worn basketball because the grip is better. Some of those newer basketballs are slick. Remember the NBA tried to change to a new basketball. It was even slicker than the one they have now, some synthetic. And guys were just going nuts, and it's really hard on the release. And so I think that his head is in the right place, but there's certain ways that the league operates in terms of its gameplay that's out of the hand of coaches like J.J. Redick. I mean, it's lip service at best. It makes him sound pretty cool talking about the warm ball, but nothing's going to change.
Yeah, I was going to say, at the lowest level, anyone who's played pickup at an open gym and say that, like, everyone brought a basketball, there's generally one ball that everyone wants to play with, and if another one comes in the game, you're like, you want to freaking kickball it into the stands. Like, get that one the hell out of here. I need a ball that's worn out with a little grip.
A little grip. That's so important, being able to have your sweat go into the ball and allows you to release it from a sticky point of view as something that just flicks and just slides off your hand that feels just doesn't get a feel for coming out of your hand the proper way.
Xavier Pope is with us. So you and I like to talk about the ever-changing world of journalism and sports coverage, and this one's more on the news side and the editorial side. I saw that the major newspapers, 5 of them in Texas, endorsed against Ted Cruz. I'm sure they have their reasons for doing that. Ted's got quite the reputation in Texas in terms of supporting the people there and in the hard times. Meanwhile, on the flip side, the LA Times, known as one of the great papers in the country, did what when it came to an endorsement or, you know, the editorial board said not worth the risk?
The editorial board was set to endorse Kamala Harris, and then the owner of the paper said that he didn't think it was a good idea. My thoughts about that, it's so interesting. I watched an old episode of Family Ties where Alex Keaton is trying to call out the principal for hiding, keeping a story under wraps, and then he gets fired from the paper because he publishes the story anyway. And it was all this whole thing about now, modern journalism, and fearing retribution from those that are in power. And I don't think we should be living in a world where the institution that's supposed to hold government leaders and holding their feet to the fire feel as if the fire is going to consume them, and they don't put out stories. What is the purpose of journalism if it doesn't do that?
I mean, sadly, in a lot of places now, the money and sales side is coming over to the editorial side way too often. So I guess the retribution could be a loss in business. I'm not sure what the right answer is. I mean, philosophically, of course, yeah, I mean, do the endorsement the way you want to do it and don't worry about the pushback.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking about now. We're blending the line, especially in an era when there's disinformation, when you have propaganda out there. Now everything people are seeing is through the lens of what they want to see, as opposed to what's important for protecting democracy and making this country great as it should be, not again.
Xavier Pope is with us. I've talked about this multiple times. Something I watched on Sunday, I was watching the replay of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I got a little three TV setup that I put together. I didn't put much of it together, but we got three TVs on the wall. So the TVs were sports, and then the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And that place is pretty interesting in terms of who they induct. Almost everyone who goes in is all mad that it took so long. Like, there's a lot of people who go in. But I thought there was a tie between Big Mama Thornton, who, if people don't know, Elvis Presley, and Hound Dog. She actually sang that first. There's a tie between Big Mama Thornton, Mary J. Blige, and Dionne Warwick in terms of eras and the kind of people they are, the kind of stuff they were fighting back against, which I think a lot of it was misogyny. I like that show because I learn, you know, I like watching all the award shows because I learn, but I wonder what your thoughts are on the kind of tying those three together.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are women who are huge in music. When they didn't necessarily get their just due in terms of rock, but they had a tremendous influence on women and how they see themselves in relationships, how they see themselves in the nature to the world they live in. And so I think that's really important to tie in. But the big thing is, you don't think about them and think rock and roll. And neither do you think about A Tribe Called Quest, who also had the opportunity to get in as well. And so it's now, to me, the term rock is now a sanitized version of pop music, sort of say, of music in general. And so I think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it should change the name. It should be called the Music Hall of Fame. None of these artists are considered rock artists, per se, Steve. Don't you think?
They probably should change it, but I get the general reference that really all music pulls from other music, and rock has so many different elements to it where you could basically everyone who's inducted could pull something from someone else or did.
Yeah, but all music is like that, Steve. All music is derivative.
Yeah.
And so you have to define, okay, what is considered rock music? If I ask you a question right now, what is rock music? You would get a 10 different answers from 10 different people what rock music is.
Right.
And so at that point, you're like, okay, now we don't even really have a real quote-unquote genre. This is just a general term for music in and of itself.
Are you fired up for you're in Chicago. Xavier Pope is with us. Are you fired up for Dodgers and Yankees and the star power in this? I saw someone list at least 7 players in this series are probably Hall of Famers. You want to make it 8 if you throw in Giancarlo Stanton. What do you think of the series?
But Giancarlo Stanton, he's really close to getting the benchmark of 500 home runs. And so he does that for a couple of years. He's a lock to get into the Hall of Fame. His postseason alone, one of the greatest Yankees in postseason history. And so I'm definitely excited about it. I was talking about this before the series started. This is what everybody wanted to see opening day, the biggest stars on the biggest stage playing against one another. I'm absolutely 100% excited. A lot of people go back to, you know, back in the 80s when the Dodgers were great, the Yankees were good. I think that this series has tons of star power. I'm not handicapping this series saying who's going to win or not. I have no idea who's going to win this year.
Let's talk a little labor in sports. And, of course, lots of people, when they saw the Players Association of the WNBA was going to opt out of the deal, the current deal's up at the end of next season, 2025. What were your thoughts on this and then kind of the mocking for the last couple of days about how dare they look for more money?
Well, any idiot that says that already is one of those idiots that shouldn't be watching the sports in the first place, who aren't real fans of the sport, knowing that the average salary is about $119,000. They have a 4-tier system that some players are just making a shade over 50 grand per year if they're on that zero to two-year tier. That is a lot of money. There are many people that are listening to the show make more than them. And so I think that's important to recognize that. Also, that was something I was expected, being that there's 140% increase on the finals, twice as many people viewed some of the semifinals matchup. You saw the Caitlin Clark, the Angel Reese's of the world. Then a TV rights deal that goes from $60 million to $200 million. And so that's what the players have done. And so they deserve to be rewarded with that, with a rise in salary and some of the other increased benefits that come along when your league is more profitable.
I want to come full circle, talk NBA here to close out the spot. By the way, good use of the word derivative. I got to add that in. I know that word. I just couldn't. It wasn't hitting me. I used the word vitriol. I spelled it incorrectly in our rundown. But LeBron and Bronny was another thing. And here's the deal. In sports TV and what I do, sports talk radio, I guess it pays more. You get more clicks if you're just a smart ass and snarky about every single freaking thing. I didn't have a massive problem with LeBron and Bronny. I wonder what you think. And then I saw you retweet something with Ernie Johnson, who followed in the steps of his father, who was in broadcasting.
Yeah, but you see what happened to Ernie Johnson, one of the best broadcasts we've ever seen. And he talked about, hey, I love working with you, Shaq and Kitty and Darkly, but this has been more important. That was a more important moment to me, working side by side with my dad. It was kind of cool getting King Griffey Jr., King Griffey Sr. to stand alongside LeBron and Bronny for that moment. If LeBron James Jr. isn't taking a job from anyone else, and LeBron James worked his butt off, became a ambassador of the league, billion-dollar athlete, and he can give all his championship to L.A., he deserves the right to bring his own son to a team. And Bronny James is a prospect. He can go to the G League, get some more experience, and see whether he can make it in the league. I don't understand why people are so invested in a young man failing. I think it's ridiculous that he's a fight for life. You have to get the chips off your lap and find a better way to place your time and attention.
Well, for me, this goes back to a lot of the stuff that LeVar Ball, I'm going to say, went through. Now, he created the firestorm. He was very, braggadocio, but he produced three boys who have turned out to be big successes. I'm not exactly sure what LiAngelo's doing, but I'm sure he's fine. We talk about the absence of good fathers and fatherhood failing. And we have examples here of guys producing solid citizens and, in these cases, good athletes. Why are we mad?
And here's the thing, Steve. We talk about athletes getting in trouble, doing these different things, being harmful towards women. LeBron James is the total opposite of that. His wife is on the court. It's his daughter Zuri's birthday when this is happening, by the way. This is what the sports want. They want their guys to represent being great role models for people who watch the game. LeBron James has hit a bullseye, no major scandals involving him. He has been a pillar model citizen for sports. You should be celebrating what he has done instead of hating on it.
Xavier, great spot as always. Love you, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Love you guys.
There he is. Griffin, say it. Say it. Turn on the mic and say it.
Love you.
That didn't feel genuine. If you're looking for a hookup on Thanksgiving, you can bring Barry's. Barry's home for Thanksgiving right here at Circa Las Vegas, Barry's Prime. They've got a whole Thanksgiving package with a curated to-go meal. That'll be the white and dark turkey meat, mashed potatoes, traditional stuffing, baby carrots, cream corn, cranberry sauce, turkey gravy. Get in now. CircaLasVegas.com for information. Barry's on Thanksgiving.